Right.
Any questions for Asha on the policy that's been included in your binder?
It's nice to have clear guidance.
Yeah. Well, as you do read through it later on, if you do have questions, just get directly with Asha and she can help guide you on appropriate responses to those. So. All right, looks like you're still on for strategic planning.
Still on, yeah. So two of our strategic planning subcommittees that have existed, I think from when we started doing strategic planning, include the housing subcommittee as well as the employer subcommittee. So the housing subcommittee, last meeting we had a discussion about a little bit of a shift related to what we wanted to do, and that Alan Urey from Synchronicity Bank.
Synchrony.
Can I bosh it one more time? I'm sorry, Alan. Has taken the leadership in working with us on that, and we invited Alan to come and talk more about the shift in direction and just what we're doing now. So.
Okay. Managers, if you want to come to the table, we would invite you to do that. Or you can
stay
right where you are, whatever you want, Alan. Yeah.
Okay. Well, at the request to take leadership there, I acknowledged up front that I don't have the expertise necessarily in refugee activities to lead a refugee discussion. However, I know a little bit about housing, and I know a little bit about committees, and with that, we've identified a plan to move forward. The strategy that we've identified includes assessing the current status of where things are at in the situation of housing for refugees, to identify any roadblocks that are currently causing problems or creating challenges for the refugee population to find housing. Identify stakeholders that we can improve that, and then of course effectively engage those stakeholders. At our first meeting, gathering this new group together, new core group together, we discussed those items and then identified a starting point where we would be going after some data. We're going to start by trying to get our arms around, better understand from data perspective what's happening today. And so the types of data that we'll be looking for initially include identifying where the current geographic dispersion is of the refugee population, and differentiate that from when they enter the country versus where they're moving to, so that we can identify starting points, where they're ending up, what is there a trend, are there issues that we need to understand perspective to that, better understanding how employment impacts the housing options and the choices that are made, and what happens with employment issues down the road, because obviously subsidies only last for so long, and they have to pay for their own housing. Review the set-asides that exist today, which are minimal. So at this point, we don't have a lot of set-asides in the population. And then some additional items that would identify household sizes, default rates, eviction rates, and just get a basic understanding of what's going on today and where things are at. Ultimately, that will help us identify what current needs are, where gaps exist, versus where we're at and where people would like to be. And then we can start to look at opportunities. The objective of my strategy that I set forth, and I'm sure Asha shared this, but my strategy that I set forth was, let's identify a core group that can bring this data together, start to understand it, and then as we understand it, start bringing in stakeholders. So we might be bringing in different groups to get a better understanding of something or to help them understand something. At some point, I think when we get to engage the stakeholders, we're going to want to find ways to get to those who provide housing and educate them on what the need is and why they shouldn't be as concerned as maybe they tend to be. Some populations end up without housing options because landlords will not rent to them, at least not by choice. And so we're trying to identify how do we cross those barriers, how do we educate people, and how can we bridge that gap that the gaps currently exist. So that's a brief outline of what we talked about doing and how we started the process, and we're starting to bring in data at this point. We just met last week, so we don't expect to have much in the way of data pulled together for another month or so. So we'll meet again, and then we'll see where we're at and continue the process.
Very good. Questions for Alan?
Alan, from an employer perspective, transportation is one of the two big issues. And when we go to speak with an employer who may have a pretty good sized work group and talk to them about how folks are having trouble getting here and so it's harder for them to work here, one of the topics that comes up is how do we get them in that, sometimes the last mile, figuratively. If it's convenient for you and appropriate, it might be helpful if you could. One of the things we always try to say is, well, where do the refugees live? Get them from point A to point B, you gotta know where the point A is. And I know that's a mushy question, but if you can, trying to approach that would be helpful.
Well, one of the things we discussed was, and one of the data points that the county of the refugee centers discussed getting, and so we've got to get the IT people who provide data to provide the data, but do a scatter map, identify where people are living. And then, of course, one of the things that, one of my points that I brought forward was refugees tend not initially, at least, to have transportation of their own. So they're relying upon the transportation system. And that does then dictate their ability for, to take employment. And one of the things that we might want to consider, we didn't discuss it in that light particularly, but one of the things we might want to discuss is where are the employment opportunities and can we identify housing opportunities that are near the employment in order to reduce that friction. And I'm familiar with that kind of a topic. I'm not unfamiliar with the refugee population. I lived for 30 years in South Salt Lake. There's a lot of refugee population there. I've had extensive interaction with them from a non-work perspective. And we had the same kind of issues from a congregational or religious perspective, getting people from where they live to where they're worshiping. And so same kind of dynamics. How do you accomplish that? How do you bridge those gaps? So very cognizant that those are issues that we need to address, but we talked about, can we get people living on transportation corridors? That's one component. But then you've got to have employers that are also on that corridor. And that makes it really tough. From my experience serving down with the homeless, I had a fellow that was living in the shelter, and he was working out in South Jordan, Riverton, Harriman area, and he left at 4 o'clock in the morning to get to work by 6. That's what he had to do. And, those are the kinds of dynamics I understand that many people are under. It's not just refugees, but many people are under those kinds of dynamics. So, good point, and I will make a note here of both transportation needs as well as maybe targeting and focusing in on housing opportunities where there's employment opportunities. And so a data point that we would be appreciative of as a committee is which employers are willing to hire refugees and where are they located, because that is a data point that would help us in this conversation.
It's a planning question, too. There's so much new stuff going in. You mentioned West Jordan. They're booming out there and that leftover dirt out that way and out there by the airport. So it's a question that if you were to answer it today, it would be an obsolete answer, you know, pretty soon anyway.
Sure.
So there's a planning component there that would be fun to factor into the silliness.
Moving target.
Awesome.
Other questions for Alan or suggestions?
I don't know how you would build this in, but it's, you know, similar to the transportation pieces that access to childcare, and how we're looking at existing affordable housing units that are available and those to come down the pipeline in that scatter map. It's very difficult to do, but where how you're placing some of food access as well as access to childcare to that hurting, holding those in as factors into your consideration.
Yeah.
Great suggestion. Others? I'll make two. There is a Housing Affordability Commission that is working on affordable housing in the state. They have done a lot of data research already. So to try to find a data set that you're comfortable with, a lot of that's been done. So maybe Becky can connect you with what that commission has done thus far and what they're recommending to the legislature.
The initial things that are available to us would be awesome.
Yep.
Rebecca Banner is a part of it.
We have Rebecca and Mike Gallegos.
Okay, perfect.
Both on the committee.
Both brilliant.
The core group, yep. And they're both on the commission. So we're trying to leverage the knowledge that's what's happening elsewhere.
Very good.
Here.
Appreciate that. One other thing to tap into with Rebecca is that the strategic plan for homelessness in Utah was approved yesterday by the State Homeless Coordinating Committee, and you can get this Becky as well, that one of the tasks in that strategic plan is to get an inventory of all the available housing across the entire state, and that's working directly with landlords, so you'll be able to then compare where refugees are residing with your scatter plot map that we can provide as a department to what that inventory looks like. They have a year to put it together, but you may want to get in on the front end so that you can understand where that's going, because it's going to serve our refugee population really as well as the homeless population.
Yep.
Okay, well, go forth and do good work. We appreciate you providing a leadership role there for us, and if there are things that we can be helpful with, don't hesitate to ask.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we are also proposing a little bit of shift in direction for the employer subcommittee as a result of the short-term training that we've been able to put in place, and Steve is going to talk more about that.
So Asha has asked us to refocus our employer subcommittee work a little bit. I made a couple of notes about to try to take a quick snapshot so you can tell where we're going. The subcommittee has been focused on finding employers for refugees, teaching employers about the unique aspects of refugee employment, coordinating with providers interested in refugee employment like the resettlement agencies, helping employers make their job offerings more appealing to refugees, building relationships between employers and the RSO for the long-term benefit of refugee employment goals, and providing a standing committee so interested employers can seek out help and support. You may have noticed, Asha, when you visited Tuesday, an employer just popped in, and it was a pretty good-sized employer who's looking for pretty big numbers. So having an infrastructure that they can plug into is positive. But there are also some changing situations in our collective world. Jobs for refugees are reasonably plentiful,
right?
Entry-level jobs are the most prevalent and are the types of jobs most often presented to us by employers. Higher-paying positions are positions with substantial and regular advancement opportunities, a little bit less common. Because of the labor shortage, employers are now more responsive to unique approaches. So all of that combined means maybe we should look at something a little bit differently in view of especially Dr. Nibbs and other researchers who are suggesting that advancement opportunities, plugging refugees into advancement opportunities as early as possible, has real merit.
And of course, we want everybody to make a little bit more money. So how do we tweak a little bit to accomplish that? Short-term training provides greater access to modestly better pay rates and advancement opportunity. Sometimes I'm a little hard on the laundry jobs, the Walmart jobs, and I want to express gratitude for those jobs, but they're not everything that we want for every refugee. An organized effort to identify positions, training curriculum, and candidate availability is credible now in today's economy. Employers may be willing to subsidize some basic short-term training programs if they have access to employees. Salt Lake Community College is already an RSO partner and a capable training resource. So we feel like we could work on increasing pay rates and advancement opportunity through short-term training in selected employment sectors. There are a lot of moving parts that have to get plugged together, but under Asha's direction, we're going to bend off, and with the approval of our group, we're going to bend off into that direction a little more.
I like it. Great idea. Any questions for Steve on some of the changes proposed?
Not so much questions, just Asha and I had a meeting earlier
this week.
And, you know, the legislature has been, so many people have been putting their best thoughts on workforce and how do we achieve, you know, matching individuals and with opportunities and skill sets, et cetera. And one of the, probably one of the more robust programs that's come out of that is called Utah Works. It was out of SB 172, Senator Miller, and I always forget the representative's sponsor. But anyway, significant amount of money for manufacturing career opportunities in aerospace, transportation, Phoenix, Colorado, and then also in aerospace and defense. And so one of the things that we're doing is we're working with five major employers that right now they've identified a need just this year of 645 people. And you know, usually the model is we put 10 or 15 people in a cohort, we train them, and then the companies come in and interview and take a look and sort out and take two or three who may be the best. In today's economy at 2.8%, and thanks for all the graphs that come up.
You're very welcome.
You know, it's shifting. Companies are hiring people and then sending them to us for training. Well, the beauty of that is there's zero cost to those individuals, and they're on the clock while they're doing the training. The one thing that we're already working on is what level of English proficiency needs to be in place for them to be successful with those particular companies. So we're talking about in all of the engineer composites, Boeing, Scotia Rail, and then for BD, and then for Merit Medical. Now, those are the five that are attached with Utah Works, but that doesn't, you know, the one thing that both Asha and I really were in lockstep on is, you know, just because you're a refugee doesn't mean that you should be in this industry or this company or these companies. You know, we want to open up the gamut and the portal as wide as we can, but we're going to take the opportunities where we can. The beauty of the five companies that are involved with Utah Works is they're all they're multinational companies that have excellent growth, and they have tremendous incentive to reinvest in their people so that, you know, whether the corporate culture is 6 months or a year, they'll send those individuals back for more training, and or if they choose to start working on a degree, they can do that. And so that's just one opportunity that we have that we're going to work together on and get the companies together with Asha and myself, and so Asha's staff, our staff, and then the representatives of the five companies to say, okay, we want to make sure that we can align and have good fits. And then, of course, the other things that we're already doing, the other programs, we want to continue to do that. It's important that every individual gets that opportunity to be successful upon entry. And in order to do that, it is with training. Now, where we differ a little bit is we do have some money from the county for our hospitality training. And while some of those jobs are back of house Some of those jobs are culinary. We have monies available for level two training, which help them move up into career. And then, quite honestly, level three training is once that property is identified that an individual is, you know, we like this individual, we want to put them in management. We're going to put them through our AAS and hospitality management. So we have three levels of training that are all funded by the county. And so, you know, it may not be exactly, you know, where they start isn't where they want to end, but it is in an industry that is tremendous need, and, you know, will create a culture. So, wide variety of opportunities. We want to make sure that we have those types of opportunities presented to all the refugees that are interested. It doesn't always help some of the smaller companies, we understand that, but, you know, we'll try to be as flexible as we can.
So, I mean, those are really great opportunities. I think one of the gaps that we feel like we recognize in the past is that tapping into a funding source that we fund ESL, there's limited funding for English as a second language. So, with the funding that you just talk about, what is the flexibility and what is the ability to tap into those funding to fund ESL?
We actually have built ESL into the Merit Medical. What we did is we went to each of the companies and said, okay, what are the competencies, what are the learning outcomes that you want for your entry-level positions? And so they defined it. Merit put in an ESL piece because they're very familiar with dealing with refugees and dealing with a wide variety of languages in the company. We'll have the flexibility of building that into the other companies as well if they choose to do so, which my guess is they probably will. They just weren't taking that direction when they were coming, you know, when we were looking at that initial design. So it's a one-time money. Our performance period is July 1st to June 30th. And then, obviously, with success, then the idea is to, go back to the well and ask for more money next year, and then try to slowly roll from $4 million in one time and $1 million ongoing to slowly roll that mixture over to more ongoing and less one-time.
So how can we help you influence the other four companies to incorporate ESL?
I don't think it's going to, quite honestly, I don't think it'll take anything, because you know, five companies with a need of 645.
And, so I think what you were saying, Rick, our first step is to meet with them to talk about that. So I think we're kind of building a similar pathway.
And we've already reached out to them since our conversation and said, hey, we've got another angle, another opportunity, another demographic, quite honestly.
But this is a piece of, I think, the shift that we want to make in terms of the employer subcommittee, that these are the kinds of opportunities we really want to focus with employers to build for refugees to have access to short-term training and career pathways, and work with those employers where we are providing training to kind of take what is going on to the next level. So we've built entry-level short-term training opportunities where the wage is reasonable, and we want to now work with employers to say, what's the next step, and how do we work with you to make sure that refugees have access to what the next level of training is, whether it's within your organization or it's something that we need to support refugees outside of that to build their wheelhouse to be able to move to the next step. So
we have, it's worth pointing out that we have some training programs already underway. They're a little more modest than what Rick's talking about. And we have a wish list of others that we want to try to put together. But in case it's not obvious, there are other training programs being done with state money. And without wanting to sound presumptuous, we ought to be able to walk up to some of those and say, you know, can we have a seat at the table? Because we don't have to do the training in this facility in order for it to be an opportunity for a refugee.
Right.
So if we could come up with a menu of the available places and do everything we can to leverage, you know, opportunities for refugees in those, we need a little broader perspective.
That's a really good point, Steve, is that there are a lot of initiatives that are happening around workforce development that are refugee-specific and that are specific specific to the broader community.
But plug in the whole.
That we can plug people into that we're just not as knowledgeable about as service providers. So I'm wondering if the committee could also incorporate some of the resources that are available and how we can refer in. Like, I was just going to ask, how are people accessing?
Well, it's very new. I mean, we're still waiting for the contract, i.e. waiting for the money.
Yeah.
But we've already had almost 50 people go through a variety of different trainings. And so they're actually coming in two ways. They're coming in either through the company's recruitment. Part of the money for this is helping us with an outreach person. We're talking to as many organizations as we can. And then, of course, we're also talking to DWS as they have referrals. They know to, you know, go with these five companies and get people there. The one thing that's helpful.
So I would say, the short answer is through us for refugees, because what we're going to do is try to build that pathway so we can refer appropriate people to Rick. So for that group, I think working with us would be the best way to do it. Sorry.
No, and I understand that, but I do think that there's opportunities as we're speaking with the larger community to also refer in, that it doesn't always necessarily need to go through the RETC as we're working, you know, with broader level communities as well.
But wouldn't it be nice to have a menu
know what they are. We can refer people in, whether it's through the RETC or other avenues.
Right.
Any other comments or thoughts for Steve?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Are the employers that you're working with using the team communication apps? Most people are carrying phones these days, and there's a team communication app that I was recently made aware of that translates between the people that are using it. So one person could be speaking English, some could be speaking something else, so on and so forth, and it translates.
How cool is that?
And while we need certainly English proficiency in order to do the job, you can increase the communication capacity if the companies are willing to use team communication apps that do translation. The one question that I'm referring to happens to be called Pronto Team Communication.
What's it called?
Pronto?
Pronto.
Team Communication. But I know there's multiple ones out there, and that's the one that just happened to come up in conversations 2 weeks ago at a meeting that I was at. And it's very popular with the with those that have been using it. So in the hospitality, motel, they're using it with their staff that speak different languages. It's easy to follow conversations, so the college-age kids like it. I haven't used it, so I'm just relaying information.
Wasn't that good for sure?
Yeah, duly noted. Thank you.
I'll just point in one other direction, Steve and Asha. To your point, Natalie, about the broader communities working on this, the Chamber has an initiative that they're beginning to focus on families that are in intergenerational poverty. And they have a foundation that Derek Miller has created as a part of the Chamber that Lisa Eccles and Clark Irie are going to lead this group. We've had an initial conversation with them about scope, what they're trying to accomplish, and it's at an infancy level stage that we may be able to influence how this can support the refugee population as well, because they oftentimes can fall into that category of intergenerational poverty. So I would suggest, I forget the staffer's name, Becky, you can probably get it from Tracy Gruber, but we can get the staffer that's supporting Lisa and Clark on this and try to figure out what they're going to try to build out, how that foundation money is going to be used, so that we can maybe plug ourselves into another opportunity that the Chamber's working on.
For training money?
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they even have any ideas of what they want to do.
Well, let's give them one.
Might it?
And just yesterday, I won't say the company because they're still, but I had a phone meeting with an individual that's representing some new company and is very interested in the IGP population, and I brought up this aspect as well. And they are, you know, they're trying to make some decisions.
Very good. So I'll open that door if you need me to, but we'll try to get Becky to find the staffer first, and if we need to sit down with Lisa and Clark, I'm happy to join you on that.
Thank you.
Okay, any other thoughts? Somebody was about to say something and I interrupted them. I don't know if it was Natalie or somebody else. Going once, going twice. Okay, we're going to thank you, Steve, for your good work.
Thank you. Steve, did you want to ask for a vote, approval vote on that?
Sure. So in your packet is under employer committee, there's a short description of the purpose and the kind of 4E in terms of the focus of that.
You have enough members here to do a vote, is my question.
We have 10.
Is 10 the magical number or is it 11?
We have 9.
So we'll have to move that to the next meeting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, Asha, RSO strategic plan. I think you and Becky are planning on covering that, correct?
Yes. So we did some work internally to build out a strategic plan for the Refugee Services Office for this upcoming, it's a federal fiscal year. So it gives us enough time to work on it. We wanted to share with you some of the kind of highlights of that plan. We the way that we went about it was to identify what are our current priorities and challenges, and then identify what we thought is a core challenge that we have been wrestling with, which isn't really anything surprising to anyone on this board. We identified kind of 4 key areas with objectives that will help guide our work, and moving forward, the data that we present from the Refugee Services Office is also focused in those areas. We are aligning the objectives with data we're using this year as an opportunity to develop more of a baseline in some of those objective areas. And I'll give Becky a chance to read the objectives and maybe take on one or two areas.
Sure. So our first objective, which aligns with building strong refugee communities, is to maintain engagement with refugee communities through outreach programs. Under increase and improve refugee skills and integration, we want to establish a baseline measurement for the number of refugees that are receiving skills and integration services. We'll sort of use this year to get our baseline measurement, so moving forward, we can set measurable objectives to achieve that goal. Third, we want to improve refugee employment opportunities by increasing the refugee living wage by 75 cents for employment and training opportunities. And finally, we want to build local valuable local community support by increasing awareness of our offerings by 10% to build valuable local community support. So again, these are measurable. They align with the data that we're already collecting, and they still sort of provide the framework for all of our work.
That is under the tab, the brown tab?
Yes, under the strategic plan tab. And then in terms of strategies and tactics, we, under each area, we identified a few key things. So we'll just share one or two from each area. So in the Building Strong Communities, we're working towards better aligning our community team to be connected with what is happening with refugee communities, and we're just there's a lot more that we're doing, but we're targeting a few things to pay attention to for this year. And then I would look at number C, improving communication with refugee communities. So we want to do a better job of really being connected with Facebook, connecting with them through Facebook and other avenues to have a better outreach plan in terms of connecting with refugees through other social media opportunities, which I don't know what they are because I don't know anything about social media. But Becky will help us with all that. In the second area, we're looking at increasing and improving refugee skills and integration. we want to do that through redesigning and implementing our integration pathway. So some of that is happening through case management and looking at all of the contracts we have and making sure that we're providing opportunities for integration skill building in all the areas that we think are critical for refugees. And then the second area is looking at the build-out related to the refugee center and what services we're offering here. Do you want to take the next two?
Sure. On our third objective, I'll just point you to, we talked a little bit about this, I think, but hosting a job fair, especially after we've had short-term training, and job fair is directly after, so you can newly trained employees with the employers. And you can click through some of those areas. And finally, in building valuable local community support. You really want to connect better with our volunteers, make it easier for them to get information through the website, to connect with specific areas of interest that they might want to volunteer in. And then we also are going to be working a lot with our social media to tell the story of our refugees, to connect with them, and internally creating a plan so that we can effectively use those social media tools for our benefit.
Yeah, one more, right? Any questions as you look at the objectives of the strategic plan?
Can you speak a little bit more about the build-out of the REPP and what some of the plans are around that?
So I think that's one of the things we want to work on a little bit more is look at, identify what programming we have had here over the last couple of years and how we are going to, what are things we're going to be a little bit more strategic around involving and including partners and activities, programming. So nothing, we don't have any clear ideas at this point.
And then would that be similar to implementing a new case management program? Is that?
No, that's, I think we've shared with you guys kind of the shifts that we are making around the outcomes, the assessment, the UWork spelled out so that we can have more uniform data and just really keeping that moving forward with the next steps in the plan that we're already been discussing, right?
Does 75 cents increase in living wage mean average wage? Or what does that mean? Increase the average wage by 75 cents?
Yes. Because that's what we measure,
uh-huh.
Is the average wage. So
in addition to the $12.39 that we're kind of off of that, that's your average.
Yeah. So when we present the data for the office, you'll see we have an average every quarter that we're looking at.
Yeah, but this is living wage.
It's moving the wage, sort of moving what we're doing for this year. We want to commit to.
I actually kind of agree with Steve on that.
Well,
it ought to be an average wage versus a living wage.
Yeah.
Because the living wage is probably significantly higher than the current average.
Yeah. Whatever it is, we keep asking about what it is. It's so hard to pin down living wage.
Depending on the law.
Yeah.
Sorry, it should say average, yeah.
Okay.
Hello. A broader question. I'm looking at the objectives, I'm looking at the goals, and I'm looking at the audiences. And I think one piece of that that maybe is good to bring it up in discussion is advocacy with a federal congressional delegation, especially surrounding the idea of the refugee ceiling, and what the role this committee could have in influencing and advocating for a higher refugee ceiling from the federal level. I know that we have done some advocacy work individually, but not collectively as an advisory board. So that's something that I think we need to bring up, and whether or not if there is a role to add to the strategic plan.
I would just, may I? Yes, thank you. Because this is the governor's refugee advisory board, we would have to consult with the governor's office if they're willing to allow us to put together an advocacy package that we could go to the delegation and others to, I guess, and strategize ways of influence what's going on at the federal level. So I'm willing to take that to him if this group feels strongly that that needs to be included.
I think it would fit nicely under number 4 of building a valuable global community support, and that includes people who are in positions of influence in terms of actually supporting and putting their actions behind.
So I'll just say I'm willing to do it.
I would say that, and so that's a role we're saying for the advisory board, not for the refugee services office. So we shouldn't think.
That's a good distinction. Yeah.
I will just add to that that the president did make an announcement just now about the refugee
being at 18,000. Being at what?
18,000.
For what?
For the refugee ceiling, for the number of refugees that will be admitted to the United States for fiscal year 20.
18,000?
It was 30 this year.
Yeah.
So now it's.
That's like not for a month, right?
So bring that from the apple for 90,000.
This last year was 30,000.
Yeah, 30,000.
So it's the lowest.
How much was last
year? But I mean, total, you guys.
She said 30,000.
30,000
last year. Last year was 22, last fiscal year.
Yeah, it was 22.
That was fiscal year.
Stealing Gerald's thunder because he's going to provide us with a national update at the end of the year.
You're dismissed.
And then just one other kind of reflection on the strategies and tactics. It would be helpful to identify who the stakeholders are in each of your strategies to understand where there's areas of kind of overlap or some organizations or offices that might have aligned strategies to what you're doing as well. And that's a conversation maybe we can have in terms of meeting or another forum, but identifying who the stakeholders are in each of the strategies and what synergies or alignments are fit with other initiatives that have.
Sure. I think one of the things we did was identify kind of the audiences for this work, but not for each specific area.
Mm-hmm. Any other input to strategies and tactics for RSO for this next year? Well, I think it would be important to get periodic updates, whether that's quarterly, you guys can decide, monthly, whenever you want to do it.
Definitely quarterly,
instead of
monthly.
Okay, quarterly it is. Let's have that as an agenda item that we can get updates on the progress in each of these areas.
One more note, we will be making a calendar that goes along with our plan, just so there's a time frame that.
Love that. Love to put people on the hook, so that is good. A calendar with who's responsible is always helpful. Okay, let's see, moving on here, I believe Debbie Cardi is going to cover the Refugee Services Fund.
Which is the purple tab.
Purple tab.
So, for those who don't know me, I'm Debbie Cardi. Russell Fillmore, who was our principal grant manager of Science for Refugees, has left our department. Sadly for me. So I was the supervisor, so I'm filling in for him. We have Katrina Say, who is going to be the grant manager over refugee going forward and stuff. So Katrina's here, but Russell put together this before he left. Thank you, Russell. And stuff. So I'm just going to present it to you. So this is quarter four of this the state fiscal year 19 and the total for the state fiscal year 19 stuff. And so you can see overall in the far left column stuff, the grand total of revenue that we collected in quarter four was $13,495, and our expenses were $16,450. But with our beginning balance, we actually have an ending balance of $41,477 and then it's broken out by all the restrictions and stuff for every category and stuff. So, do you have any questions?
You guys always have questions on this, so let them stare at it for a minute and they'll ask a question. We're counting on you to just ask a bizarre question that Asha can figure out how to answer. Maybe we've scrubbed this so well that we don't have any questions at all.
I think Russell did a great job of how we shape this going forward for you guys. And
Yeah, the categories are helpful.
I am curious to find out, it looks like there was 2,400 revenue coming in for funerals. How is that made?
So the leadership class this year, the refugee leadership class, decided that part of the class, they chose an activity that they would educate the community and fundraise, and they chose this funeral as the place that they were fundraising to put money in. And I think the total was more than what's in here. The rest of it hasn't made it in yet. But
that's great.
Yeah, really is. It's so compelling too. It's like, please, right?
Yeah.
Jeez. Was World Refugee Day really upside down?
So we had a beginning balance that had carried over from other years and other donations from previous quarters. So we had only collected $10,000 in quarter four. So overall, Refugee Day was not upside down.
Okay.
But in that quarter, yes.
Gotcha.
But you had other previous donations in other quarters.
That makes sense. Yep.
Associated with that day, not associated with previous years.
Some from previous years, some from other quarters and stuff.
But your sense of it is, and I know I'm catching you kind of off guard, but your sense of it is the World Refugee Day was positive this year.
Yes.
Okay. That's cool.
So it is for when there's no other options. So we try to work with people if they can use rapid rehousing or any other rental assistance that can help meet that need. So oftentimes
reserve until that.
Yeah, so when we get requests, we work with the individual to see if there's existing pots of money that they could utilize first. And this is kind of a last resort. And it's not very much, so we try to.
So who is accepting the last call of the year? Who are the
So we've used it for short-term training. We did get some funds donated specifically for short-term training, private dollars, so we're not utilizing it right now as much. But it's very simple.
Yeah, it is.
Any other questions about the fund? I know I could count on you guys to ask good questions.
There is
one request or what?
There is a request.
Okay. Describe
so it. So if you turn to the next page, there is a request to use, I think, just the general funds for. We host quarterly dialogues with refugee leaders on generally on Saturday afternoons, and so we're requesting snack funding for the group for the next few meetings. And these are not the exact dates that the meetings would be held on. Well, they are the exact dates. Okay, so.
Okay, so the quandary you have is you don't have a quorum to vote on that. So what would you like to do? Would you like to do it via email? Would you like to...
Yeah.
I don't know when the next meeting is. I think it's not on
November.
The next meeting is going to be
after the email. Yeah. Okay,
so we'd probably do it by email.
Everybody okay with that? Since we don't have a majority vote here, so there's no sense of discussing the vote. Is everybody generally supportive?
Right.
Is everybody generally supportive?
Which category does it come out?
You're not supportive.
No, I'm supportive.
Unrestricted funds?
Yeah.
The very first column where it's out of.
Oh, okay.
It goes to the UR.
Oh,
Okay, any other questions for Debbie? Thank you, Debbie. Yep.
Thanks, Debbie.
Good update. Okay, round us out, Michael. You and Gerald, I believe, are going to round us out, take us to the finish line. So, you got 10 minutes or so to do so. So, we'll have some opportunity for questions if people have.
Okay, I will be concise. Thank you. So, first, you want to turn to the data sheet.
It's the blue tab.
Blue tab.
RSO update.
All right, so overall, the numbers are quite similar to last quarter. 2,736 services were provided. These are distinct services, so someone that takes a class is counted once, someone that comes and gets a job is counted once. That's broken into three areas. As you can see, community development is the largest. That will always be the largest. Those are primarily large group events, but that's kind of the structure we have here that convenes people and then we funnel them into the pathways of employment, crisis support, and service managers. You'll see underneath that 84% of those that we worked with have been here over 2 years. Moving on to the next page, 381 individuals came looking for employment. From that group, 123 found jobs. They found jobs with 44 different employers. The average wage is $12.59 an hour. This is up 30 cents from last quarter. And actually, if you take the Humanitarian Center off of this and the training program, that wage jumps to $12.97 per hour.
Good job.
Moving right along. Trainings. Quarter two, we have four trainings here, 35 individuals. I'd like to point out the completion rate is 100% for that quarter. The warehousing class had a $14.13 average wage post-training. And just one quick story, one of the individuals that took the medical manufacturing class, her name was Amani. She's a single mother that's been unemployed for a long time. After this training, she got a job at Merit Medical and is now making $15.25 an hour. Next page, so the category of skills and integration. At the top, it is the intake. Intake is where we have anyone who can drop in and they need help with support. 608 individuals accessed this in quarter two. From them, we had 1,308 referrals. The majority of them were economic. It's primarily people looking for jobs. One story of kind of what this is Constantine came in. He had graduated in 2015, went to work in a factory. He was kind of inspired by some of his friends to go to college because they got good jobs. However, he had outstanding debt with SLIC from some courses he tried in the past. So we connected him with Dr. Kamal Biwar from Salt Community College. His debts were resolved. He's registered now, and he also got connected to a $1,000 scholarship. So that's just one of the many things that happens in that office.
Great.
Below it is our LCT team, our therapist team. 49 evaluations and treatment referrals. These are the more severe situations we encounter. 75% of those were in mental health. Right. And then the last page, these are all programs and events. So where it says events, it actually should say programs and events. The top line is ones that we lead ourselves here. Underneath it are ones that the refugee community-based organizations run with our support. And those organizations are ones we do fund and ones we don't post our support. So we did 28 events and programs, 313 participants, whereas the community had 43 events, 1,455 participants. This is one of the great benefits of the RCBO funding, is we really can draw a wide variety of people that we otherwise wouldn't see. And then right in the bottom, 84 volunteers in 390 hours served in quarter two. This is really a key piece of what makes our programs float. Any questions on that before we move on?
Questions for Michael? All looks real good. Keep going.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So now we're jumping to the center report. Whereas the first one is on quarter two, the center report is just up until now. So the first piece, update on occupational trainings. Three of these are continued trainings that we've done in the past to make good results. But there's a few new ones here as well. We finished our first phlebotomy cohort, which is pictured above. They're all looking for jobs at the moment. And also, we did just start an end-post training. It's a partnership with Horizonte. We have 6 individuals that are working on an intensive program to prepare for the police officer exam. So this is getting started. On the bottom, we had our first tech class at the partnership with Salt Lake Community College. So this is a more formal program where a lot of the other ones were more loose. 13 students in this class and 10 finished. I had the pleasure of sitting in for the graduation and listening to the instructors talk. It's a story I've heard multiple times from these instructors. And he talked about how this is the best class he ever taught. And he went on to say that this class changed his life and new students. And like I said, I've heard that before, so it's just a pleasure that I get the experience that I wanted to share there. I'll actually ask you to flip ahead one extra page to the Microsoft Certified Solution Associate. This is one that just came in at the end after we printed this.
The last page.
Okay. So we just finished up this course on Saturday. I'd like to thank me as well and the Asian Charitable Foundation, who has handled some of the donations for this class. This is one of the volunteer-led trainings. It's led primarily by volunteers from Oracle and 3M. And it's a one-year class, very difficult, as after the first day, I didn't even know what language they were talking anymore. So we started with 13 students, and from those 13 students, 7 finished. And as of Monday, 4 of them have been employed in the field, and there have been really significant wage increases. So 2 of them were promoted. So they had one that was making $41,000 before, moved up to $49,000. Another one's kind of an interesting story. It's a gentleman from Ethiopia. He took the forklift training here. From that, he got a job at $15 an hour. Then he continued down to the Salt Lake Community College basic computer class, which is very basic. It's even starting with how to move the mouse at this time, going on to Word and Excel. From there, he went into the MCSA class, worked really hard, finished it, and he actually moved from the forklift position with the same company called Globus Relief to an IT position and jumped up from $15 to $22 an hour. 2 others that got new jobs. One I mentioned last time, he was actually a manager at Wendy's. He got an IT position at Les Olson, which is right down the road. That was at $40,000. And then our last one, which is really the one we're proud of.
Keep going, man. That'd be great.
Yeah. The number's getting bigger. 100! Okay.
But we had an individual from Sierra Leone, graduated from college with a bachelor's degree in biology. Was unable to find a job. He was working in a factory. He took the MCSA class. From there, he also took down the Salt Lake Community College Web Dev class. They're both really hard, and it's a lot of work outside of class. Finished both of them successfully. He was actually one of the best students in both class, but his wage before was $17.25, and he just took a job at $35 an hour.
Way to go. Wow.
$73,000. A huge increase there.
Yeah, cool.
And I would point out this gentleman, Andrew, in the red shirt, volunteers every Saturday to teach these students. That's what makes this class happen. And all your hard work, too.
I don't know any of this stuff. He's going on 3 years of being here. It's over 80% of Saturdays.
Wow.
So it's incredible people are going to this.
Yeah.
One other little update that I didn't put on here. The Java class finished a while ago, but one of our favorite companies in Lehigh, MX, who had taken on interns before, they actually took on 1 new intern, 2 higher positions. It's a 3-month, $20 an hour internship that if they do well, will lead to a job. And they're just in the process now of finishing up the second one, which will be our last student remaining from the Java class. Then, to jump back, the refugee story. So the Gold Group now is enjoying a new space in Building C where they have access to the machines throughout the day. There's 2 basic courses going on, and they also started a 3rd program. This is a partnership with Cotopaxi, and then we also partnered with one of the RCBO organizations, the United African Women of Hope. They're going to help with some of the management going forward. But this new project, Cotopaxi is paying the students to repair their bags. And also we have just different clothing coming in for alterations and repairs. We just piloted with our office to start, but so far the average wage is $11.35 for students in that class. We hope to continue to grow that.
Very good.
So someday we'll ask for your clothes to tailor. Below it we have youth programs. The picture here is Girls in Code. This is our second cohort of Girls in Code. It's been a pretty popular program and a lot of volunteers are interested in helping. One key thing we want to incorporate this year is this will finish around Christmas, and then we want to start our next Java cohort in January that we can make a pipeline, take them on into the Java class. And our end goal ultimately will be internships, which MX is looking at doing 5 in this class, and then possibly higher education from there. And so let's jump to the last page now, the second class. In August, we did a nice event with the Goldman Sachs volunteers. We helped connect them with the Emotion Generation. This is another one of the RCPO groups that's led by a young Congolese gentleman, focuses primarily on kids from Central Africa. And they had 14 volunteers that came down. They did a workshop on different career opportunities and pathways to get there. Something that they want to repeat again in the future. And lastly, the refugee experience. We just conducted our third refugee experience. If you're not familiar with it, it's a really engaging experience where people can experience firsthand some of the obstacles that refugees face relocating here. 36 employers were there. And from that, we've had a lot of requests to duplicate this. And we're just trying to see how we'll be able to do it. So that's it. Any questions from there?
Any questions for Michael?
We're getting our money's worth out of you, dude.
Yeah, good job. Yeah, really good work. Appreciate it. And then I think we have Gerald Brown. Give us the national perspective, right? What's going on at the federal level?
No, I just had two things, John.
Yep.
One of them is
from Natalie Cook from you, right? Yeah. Okay.
But they announced this afternoon the 18,000, so that's one. The other is on the federal budget, which affects us. You know, our funding, there's a continuing resolution that's been passed by both houses, and it's going to the president's desk, and it's, people say they think he'll sign it, so that's until late November.
Yeah. Are those cuts to that budget, or what does it look like? Would it keep a hole?
I think it'll be at the level it was this year, which is...
So it's a continuing resolution. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. And then is there talk about the 18,000, or is it too premature, like how it'll distribute it? Can we take 6 of those? I mean, is there a methodology? I knew there was some talk about states opting in to being, you know, refugee-friendly or supportive of...
I think a lot of people have been advocating for a higher number and opening, but I don't think anybody's really surprised by the number.
That's actually better than what we thought. Yeah. The meeting was 8,000 to 15,000. So, I mean, that's helpful. I would just add that the executive order was also signed that you're referring to that would allow states and even down to local governments.
So right now, as we know it, the State Department still decides who's going where. Is that same process that we used today?
Okay. Now, my guess is it will be challenged in court every which way, and you know, there will be a stay put on it.
Do we know how many you've had in Utah? How many
of
the East out of the 22 of this?
I know for us it was about 257. I don't remember.
I think it was like around 150.
Yeah, 150, 160, something like that.
So, yeah.
Is there a guess for the year?
We are at 321.
Guess
was what,
150, 180
again?
Yeah.
Like
that, so it's going to be around 500 total.
Yeah, I think that's what we, when we met, that's what we came up with. But it's almost the end of the federal fiscal year, so we'll send out something. once the final numbers are in.
Yeah, the demographic.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see that.
Yeah.
Which countries, yeah.
I mean, would it be appropriate, especially for the members of the advisory board who are not here, to share that type of impact or that update and to kind of highlight the impact that sex has on our community? Kind of not in the sense of advocacy, but more of education and knowledge. I think we talk a lot about these services that are happening, especially as it relates to RSO and RTC, but the larger context, I think sometimes gets lost.
Which is, I think, to add to that, it's unfortunate that that's the question of obligation, because back to one thing, we really did not step up. I put something out in this floor letter to the president, but he was the only one. And even the Arizona congregation did something, really. So I think there's opportunity for Utah to shine, really, and really put some more pressure on what we can do as a community to make sure that they are representing the Utah values.
So I think what we can do, Natalie, is send out, once the year ends, the numbers for Utah and what the presidential determination is this year, how it compares to last year and previous years. So we can send that out to the board.
Chart and graph too that show the you can educate without doing that. You see components as well, and again, that goes into the wonderful work that happens here, but there's also the impact that people like the community faces and feels, especially so many numbers.
I don't have any discomfort on educating a broader population on what the impact has been over the last couple of years. I don't think the governor would be opposed to that.
Would it be appropriate to include all this information in the report that we sent to the governor?
We can do that, yeah.
Because we use that report for communications.
When does that get submitted each year?
It's due to the governor's office December 1st, and we're just starting to work on it,
yeah.
So Becky and I can definitely add a piece of that.
Yeah, let's add that in there. Yeah. So we'll grab your graphs and charts. And
sure, that would be great. And if there's possible to have a snapshot of the resettlement agencies in that report, a little bit more and what our response is and how we can
help. I don't think we're opposed to that at all. That's helpful.
You know, what isn't obvious in these wonderful human stories we hear from Michael is the contribution these folks are making to the community.
Yep.
We see how warm it is for the individual people, but we don't necessarily connect that to the broader community is benefiting.
Absolutely.
By all of these skills and workers. And
you're absolutely correct.
Creating taxpayers, to be honest.
Yep. Totally agree. Okay, we have gotten through all of our agenda items, I believe. Are there any other items for the good of the group? Okay, we changed the meeting date because on Thanksgiving we'll all be with our families. So the date is December 5th. Thursday, December 5th is the change. So we'll send out
an
appointment so you have all that changed on your calendar, but take note that December 5th will replace that November 28th date. Okay, seeing nothing else, I declare we're adjourned for today's meeting. Thank you.
The dream journal. We never approved those minutes. We'll have to do it next time.
Yeah, there was
two sets of them. Yeah. Why did they need to all of them? That's what they did. We saw that today. It was like a lot of chips.
Bye
for now.
See you, John.
Yeah, I did that. And I sent out the agenda with it and did it.
Yeah, but I think it's all about.
Oh, so they ignored that, you think, maybe?
Just two.
Okay. They probably ignored me. You're right.
No, I don't know.
Is this your problem?
Yes.
Why do I have one? I'm going to get a bottle of water, okay?
Feel it.
My throat is...